Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, February 28, 2017. South Sudanese in a village in Lier say they eat wild plants to stay alive.
Sometimes you can go to the river to collect the water lily, even you can go to the fishing. There's no alternative at all. Yeah, that's the light. And then as you see now, the people, they look like wild animal. Seen in 2013, there's no crop.
And Germany makes another donation to help feed hungry South Sudanese.
It will also be for health and sanitation, so that people who are already weak will not be weakened further by sicknesses like cholera or tuberculosis. And it will also be in a certain part and where the security situation allows.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Civilians trapped by conflict in Lier County of the former Unity State say they have survived on water lilies and other wild fruits for the last 3 years. Aid agencies say they have had difficulties accessing the area for several months. Locals told VOA they cannot farm the land due to sporadic military attacks in the area. Waki Simon Wudu recently traveled to Lier with the UN World Food Programme and has this story for VOA from Juba.
A community mobilizer tries to assemble thousands of South Sudanese who queue up in a long line at the Tonyo Registration Center in former Unity State, Lier County, to register with the UN's Food Agency, World Food Program, and the Children's Agency, UNICEF, for relief aid. Last week, UN agencies declared famine in Lier County, one of two counties where famine exists in South Sudan. 32-year-old Ray Nguyen-Chek, a father of eight, says continued fighting has caused the famine.
The war is the one who destroyed all the things here. And then you see now there's no crop. We plant nothing. And then we have no food. As you see now, all the children that are here in the sun, they are crying. Due of the famine in this area.
Life in Lier is a daily struggle. Government forces have been battling former First Vice President Riek Machar's rebels ever since fighting broke out in South Sudan in late 2013. Villagers fled their homes and sought refuge in the bush and swamps. Thousands of civilians still hide and search for wild food in the swamps. Many homes burnt to the ground. Entire villages are deserted. Being a rebel-controlled area, there is no sign of government services in Lier. Schools and healthcare facilities are abandoned. Aid agency officials say they have been unable to access the area due to insecurity and accuses government authorities of repeatedly blocking them from accessing the area. A majority of Lier's residents are pastoralists, while a few are farmers or fishermen. But Chek says due to the conflict, all the residents have resorted to collecting wild plants or catching fish to survive.
The survival, then sometimes you can go to the river to collect the water lily, even you can go to the fishing. That is, then there's no alternative at all. Yeah, that's the light. And then as you see now, the people, they look like wild animal. Seen in 2013, there's no crop.
45-year-old Bol Mol, another Lier resident, used to be a government security officer working for an oil company before the outbreak of war. Mol, who is now jobless, says he now hunts wild plants for food.
Our traditional system, people are eating two at a day, morning and evening. And then like situation of this time, if people are get food, if you eat in the evening, meanwhile in the evening you overnight, you eat the other day. And if you eat in the evening, then tomorrow you can leave without food. You get food in the evening. That's the system that we are now.
Brigadier General Mawin Nyalpal is the Lier County Commissioner. Speaking in Arabic, he says drastic measures are needed to fight the famine in Lier.
The civilians, cattle, goods, and houses here were all burnt down. Even churches, schools, and clinics were burnt down. We don't have anything. There is nothing good in this area. Civilians are tired. They are dying of hunger, no food, no cattle.
UN agencies said a week ago that at least 100,000 people are affected by famine and have no access to humanitarian services in South Sudan. They warn the situation is likely to worsen unless agencies and the government take immediate measures to address the situation. George Fomien, the WFP spokesperson in South Sudan, says insecurity and government blockades have hindered operations of aid agencies which could have averted famine in the country.
The biggest issue has been insecurity in some of these areas, which makes it difficult to access. And so we've heard from people in this community that they have been constantly under attack, that homes have been burned, and so people flee and get into places such as islands.
The UN describes the currency situation as a man-made famine. Aid officials say 4.9 million people, nearly half of the country's population, urgently needs food aid. Wake Simon Odo, VOA News, Juba.
The government of Germany has donated more than $42 million to South Sudan to help buy food and other emergency relief items for millions of people affected by the more than three-year-long conflict. The German ambassador to South Sudan is calling on other donor countries to help reduce South Sudan's widespread food shortages. Mungume Davis Rwakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
German ambassador Johannes Lehne says his government cannot watch as people are starving.
As the famine was declared in northern Leech state, and in other parts of the country, you also know that there is a lot of needs because of the insecurity. The German government has decided to allocate another 40 million in order to help the people to survive this and that the humanitarian crisis does not spread further.
Last week, the government and three UN agencies declared famine in former interstates, Mayendit and Rer counties. A former famine declaration means people have already started dying of hunger. Government and UN officials reported last week that 4.9 million people, about 42% of the country's population, are food insecure. Besides procuring food items, Ambassador Lehne says the money will be used to buy other non-food items, such as medical supplies.
It will also be for health and sanitation, so that people who are already weak will not be weakened further by sicknesses like cholera or tuberculosis. And it will also be in a certain part, and where the security situation allows, it will be for rehabilitation of the war-affected areas.
UN agencies say an upsurge in violence since July 2016 has further devastated food production, even in previously stable areas. The soaring inflation of up to 800% and reduced harvest has also hit areas which had traditionally relied on local markets to meet food needs of South Sudanese. Ambassador Lehne is calling on other countries to step up the plate.
You probably have seen that the humanitarian community and the United Nations have put out an emergency appeal on South Sudan, which is actually asking for $1.6 billion. And up to now, countries like US, Great Britain, Germany, the European Union, they have participated in this, but a lot of countries still do not have participated in this.
United Nations agencies warn that unless urgent action is taken now, more people will starve to death in South Sudan. The German ambassador says, above all, government and rebel fighters must lay down their weapons.
What we would like to see here is the implementation of the peace agreement and a successful national dialogue. I mean, I think the president has made in his speeches in December last year, and now at the opening of the parliament, he has found the right words. We want to believe him that his efforts to bring peace to this country are sincere.
Germany is asking the government to stop military activities and support the international community in order to bring peace to South Sudan and make it a prosperous country.
That was Mungume Davis Rakarenj reporting for VOA from Juba. An international Catholic Church-based organization says while it's crucial to help refugees with food and shelter, it's also important to address their emotional and psychological needs as many arrived traumatized by war. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The Jesuit Refugee Service in Uganda serves more than 6,000 urban refugees, some of whom are South Sudanese. The refugees receive education services, livelihood training, emergency assistance, and psychosocial support. New refugees also receive help with rent, food, and medical care for up to 3 months. Father Kevin White, the Jesuit Refugee Service Country Director for Uganda, says many newly arrived refugees also need counseling.
A lot of the people that come to us, a lot of our beneficiaries, have suffered terribly trauma, not only from exile, but all the conflict and violence that they experienced that caused them to flee their homes.
Father White says one way to relieve depression, grief, and stress among refugees is to build their self-esteem.
And so we try to provide the urban refugees who've chosen not to stay in settlements with the skills that they need to support themselves and to live in the dignity that God wants them to have.
Jesuit Refugee Services, or JRS, runs a vocational school that offers refugees courses in English language, computer skills, catering, tailoring, carpentry, hairdressing, and arts and crafts. Jane Modong, a South Sudanese learning how to sew at the JRS school, says after her training she plans to buy her own sewing machine, start up a small business, and support her mother, two brothers, and two sisters.
I've been working as a maid, but the money I get, it's little. And when I get, I have to send to them to help them. So after knowing that JRS, they give services to people, I was like, it's better, let me come and learn.
South Sudanese refugee Regina Santino also takes classes at the school. She hopes to learn a skill and earn enough money to enable her siblings to resume their education.
This year, all of them, they're at home, no one is studying. And before, I'm just trying to do business, but it's not going well.
Father White says there is nothing more rewarding than helping distressed refugees deal with the trauma they have experienced and help them to be able to move on with their lives.
In addition to the services we provide, which are good, very good, one of the greatest things that we can provide is just some human understanding and compassion.
The UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, says Uganda hosts about 1 million refugees, including 90,000 urban refugees from the East African and Great Lakes regions. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, women in Torit Town learn how to feed their children. We'll come back to that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do events in other countries affect you and your family?
Yes, a lot. Because I think in this country, Ghana, for example, whatever happens in the global world also affects us, especially the economy, because we export a lot.
It affects me because I work in Dubai. If there's a disaster, for example, there's a ban of where I'm working from, it means that I got to go out of work and probably my family won't get anything. They won't get money, they won't get any support.
Yes. But most especially in Nigeria, you see what is happening with Boko Haram. It started in Nigeria and it has affected Cameroon already. So they actually affect the national life and my family too.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about preventing heart disease. South Africa is one of the sites for the first major clinical trial that attempts to prevent heart disease and stroke among HIV-positive patients who are at the higher risk of these conditions. As VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg, doctors and researchers say this trial is part of a long-term effort to keep up as the HIV-positive population lives longer.
What makes this HIV trial different is that it represents a new front in the war on AIDS, helping those living with the virus to have long and healthy lives. The $20 million a year U.S.-funded trial is expected to take about 6 years and includes 6,500 participants, ages 40 to 75 in 5 countries. It will look beyond just the virus. As the HIV population ages, doctors are learning the disease's relentless attack on the immune system causes other problems. Dr. Carl Diefenbach of the U.S. National Institutes of Health explains.
What we're seeing is an increased risk in HIV-positive people, a 50% increase in stroke, and a 100% increase in cardiovascular events, primarily coronary events, heart attacks. And women actually have an even higher risk than men, which is one of the reasons we're here. There's a burden of disease in women in sub-Saharan Africa. And I think this population would be quite useful for us to truly prove that we have this drug that might help them.
During the trial, participants in the United States, Canada, Thailand, Brazil, and South Africa will get one extra pill per day, in addition to their normal antiretroviral therapy. That pill will either be a placebo or a statin, a class of drug used to help lower cholesterol levels in the blood, which in turn can help prevent heart attacks and stroke. South Africa has the world's highest burden of HIV. 7 million people are estimated to be infected, according to the UN AIDS Agency. The country also has the largest antiretroviral therapy program, with more than 3 million people receiving treatment. The Heart and Stroke Foundation South Africa also notes that 1 in 3 South African adults has high blood pressure, which can cause heart attacks and stroke. The nation's health minister has also sounded the alarm over the country's high rate of diabetes and prediabetes. Director Geeta Ramji of the South African Medical Research Council's HIV Prevention Program says this study is important for the nation's heavily burdened health system.
In terms of non-communicable diseases in HIV-positive individuals, I think this is a critical study to reduce the burden of non-communicable diseases and also to reduce the burden on the health systems.
Diefenbach says the ideal study participants are otherwise healthy people who happen to have HIV, something he says was unthinkable when he began to study the disease in the early 1990s.
Isn't it a great thing? So when I started my career, HIV was a death sentence, and there were no treatments. And through my career, I've seen the development of antiretroviral therapy to fixed-dose combinations of therapy to one pill once a day. Now we're talking about dealing with this question of aging and aging well and healthily. At the same time, we're working on cure and prevention. I mean, we're doing everything we can to make HIV history.
Decades ago, that sounded impossible. But today, he says, he knows of HIV-positive patients in their 70s and 80s who are living healthy lives. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Some women leaders in Imatong State are moving from house to house, teaching mothers in Torit the proper way to feed their children. They are also identifying severely malnourished children. The women say at least 2,000 children in Torit have been diagnosed as severely malnourished since the campaign began 2 weeks ago. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Torit.
As cases of malnutrition rise because of food shortages and localized famine in South Sudan, a group of Torit women are helping UNICEF and the local charity Christ Early Childhood Development Advocacy Group teach other women how to help children at risk of malnutrition. They use 3 colors. Green stands for a child who is well-fed and healthy. Yellow means there is no proper feeding, and red means a child is severely malnourished. Charity officials say many mothers are too afraid to take their malnourished children for treatment out of shame. Rhoda Simon is a mother support group leader in Torit's High Lotuko residential area. Speaking in Arabic, she says her group began the campaign a few weeks ago to encourage mothers to take malnourished children to nutrition centers.
We are searching for children who are suffering and women who don't take their children to the hospital. We are telling them to take their children to the hospital. We prepare for them porridge and call mothers to bring their children in the area. We ask them to sit down and educate them on how best they should feed and grow their children in health living condition.
Susan Kiji, another member of Mother Support Group, says she has learned a lot during the campaign.
If we get these children, immediately we make a referral case. If we get the mother is not around in the morning, we come and take them to the hospital until the child is fine. Also, when we see the area is dirty, then we shall carry health education. If there is a remnant of food, it should be covered. The child's feces should be thrown in a pit latrine. We are now benefiting because death rate for children has reduced.
KG says the campaign helps women understand how to cook properly. Madalena Idiongo Tartisho is a leader for the mother support group in Toris Inyif residential area. Speaking in Arabic, she says many parents keep their children for long hours without feeding them.
During the time when we started our work in Eastern Equatorial, we have seen a lot of changes. The number of malnourished children has reduced. Children are now healthy, but we are still continuing. There are few children we are getting, and we refer them to the hospital for treatment. Slowly by slowly, mothers here will change.
Achien Knight, who works for Christ Early Childhood Development, says her charity wants to ensure that children get to school at an early age and to help the malnourished children who often join school late and do not perform well.
They are not able to know that my child today is sick. So the aim of the check that is to see that no child which is malnourished in the community. All children which are sick at home, the child should be taken to the hospital. They wanted to see that all the mothers have got all the case studies to do with hygiene.
Achen says they also ensure that mothers breastfeed their children for 6 to 12 months without introducing other foods such as porridge. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Turit.
Few spots around the world are as troubled as East Africa, where South Sudan is struggling with conflict and famine, Burundi remains stuck in political crisis, and Somalia and Kenya are trying to deal with Al-Shabaab. Analysts say ethnic mistrust and weak government are undermining the regional response to crisis. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
5 years ago, East Africa appeared to be on the dawn of a peaceful age. After years of regional intervention, South Sudan had become independent, Al-Shabaab was retreating in Somalia, and Burundi's long civil war was over. But today, all three countries are back in crisis. The worst situation is in South Sudan, where a three-year civil war combined with drought has dragged parts of the country into famine. Ambassador Ochieng Adala is the former head of Africa Peace Forum and Kenyan UN ambassador, who has been involved in South Sudan talks since the late 1990s. He says regional leaders failed to follow up on the 2005 agreement that paved the way for South Sudan's independence.
When South Sudan Comprehensive Peace Agreement was negotiated, we lacked the follow-up mechanism. The negotiators did not put in place a mechanism to follow up and make sure that the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was adhered to, and there would be sanctions or the punishment for people who violated the peace agreement.
Adala says negotiators and peacemakers have failed to address ethnic conflicts when trying to resolve disputes in South Sudan and across East Africa.
You see the tribal element in there. Now, how do you help another country solve its own tribal conflicts when you have the same tribal conflicts at home? So the tendency would be to try and bury your head in the sand. Don't overplay the tribal card. and hope that things will solve themselves.
Political analyst Emmanuel Kisiangani says a lack of democracy and good governance limits the region's ability to address the political disputes.
I think that is the challenge that we've had in the region. If you look at Uganda, accusations of rigging elections, if it is Ethiopia, I don't think that that is a good example in terms of promoting democracy. Kenya has had its own issues.
Freedom House, an organization that promotes human rights and democracy, ranked nearly every country in East Africa as not free. In its most recent report, only Kenya and Tanzania escaped that label, being judged as partly free. Some observers say the regional bloc IGAD cannot solve the current conflicts alone and will need greater help from the African Union and United Nations to resolve the region's crisis. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Dola Jadid by Silver X and WJ.
I am saying,
for $100,
hey, yeah.
For $100.
We have been listening to Silver X and WJ with that song Dola Jedi. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for tuning us onto your dial. Please join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.